Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, Anthony Abraham Jack's The Privileged Poor, How Elite Colleges Are Failing Disadvantaged Students, is a sociological study of inequality in higher education, drawing on research at an elite Northeastern university. The book examines how economically disadvantaged students experience campus life differently, depending on their pre-college schooling. Jack distinguishes between students who attended elite private high schools on scholarship, whom he calls the privileged poor, and those who came directly from under-resourced public schools, whom he calls the doubly disadvantaged. The book's purpose is not simply to show that low-income students face hardship, but to explain how institutions often misread those hardships and design policies around a narrow idea of merit and belonging. By focusing on culture, class, networks, and campus routines, Jack shows that admission alone does not equal inclusion. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, the gap between access and real inclusion. A central argument of the book is that elite colleges often celebrate access while ignoring the conditions needed for students to actually thrive. Jack shows that gaining admission, financial aid, or a scholarship is only the first step. Once on campus, students must navigate social norms, academic expectations, and hidden rules that are usually taken for granted by wealthier peers. The book makes clear that universities can widen opportunity in one sense while reproducing inequality in another if they do not address daily life beyond the classroom. This is why Jack repeatedly shifts the focus from enrollment numbers to campus culture. He argues that institutions often measure success by who arrives, not by who feels able to participate fully, ask for help, or build relationships that matter for advancement. In this way, the book reframes equity as a matter of inclusion, not just admissions. Secondly, why prior schooling shapes college survival. Jack's distinction between the privileged poor and the doubly disadvantaged is one of the book's most important analytical tools. Both groups are low income, but their high school backgrounds prepare them differently for elite college life. Students who attended selective private schools through scholarship programs often arrive with greater familiarity with affluent environments, faculty access, and the informal codes of elite education. By contrast, students from under-resourced public schools may enter with less exposure to these norms and therefore face greater culture shock. Jack does not present this difference as a matter of talent or motivation. Instead, he shows how institutional environments reward forms of preparation that are unequally distributed before college even begins. This helps explain why two students with similar economic backgrounds can experience the same campus in very different ways. The book's analysis is especially strong because it shows that inequality is cumulative, not punctual. What happens in high school continues to shape confidence, behavior, and opportunity in college. Thirdly, campus culture rewards the already connected. The book argues that elite universities often function through social practices that quietly advantage students who already know how the system works. Wealthier students are more likely to arrive with confidence about office hours, internships, networking, and informal contact with faculty. They understand that relationships can produce recommendations, leadership roles, and professional opportunities. Jack contrasts this with students from lower-income backgrounds who may have been taught that self-promotion or strategic networking is morally suspect. The result is that the campus rewards behaviors and expectations that are culturally familiar to affluent students while making others feel awkward or out of place. Jack's point is not that disadvantaged students lack ability, but that institutions often mistake cultural unfamiliarity for weakness. This topic is important because it explains how inequality is reproduced through ordinary routines, not just through explicit exclusion. The campus environment itself becomes a sorting mechanism that channels some students toward opportunity and leaves others isolated from the networks that shape later careers. Fourthly, material hardship as a hidden academic barrier. Jack gives serious attention to the practical burdens that low-income students carry at elite colleges: food insecurity, break periods when dining services close, and the inability to afford ordinary social participation, all shape the college experience in ways that are easy for institutions to overlook. These are not minor inconveniences. They affect whether students can focus on coursework, remain on campus, or participate in the social life that often determines belonging and access to information. The book is effective because it treats material hardship as academically relevant rather than as a separate welfare issue. Jack shows that a university can be intellectually excellent while remaining inattentive to basic student needs. That mismatch is one of the book's sharpest criticisms of elite higher education by emphasizing everyday scarcity. He demonstrates how poverty continues to operate after admission and how small policy choices can create large differences in student persistence, comfort, and participation. Lastly, what elite institutions would need to change. Although the book is critical, it is also practical. Jack does not argue simply that colleges should admit more disadvantaged students and stop there. He suggests that universities must rethink policies, advising structures, faculty expectations, and campus routines so that low-income students are not expected to adapt silently to a system designed around wealthier norms. This includes recognizing that students need more than tuition support. They need environments that make it possible to ask for help, build networks, and meet basic needs without stigma. The broader implication is that elite colleges must see themselves as active participants in inequality, not neutral spaces that merely reflect outside social divisions. Jack's recommendations matter because they push institutions to move beyond symbolic diversity and toward structural responsibility. The book therefore serves as both a diagnosis and a guide for colleges that want to become genuinely inclusive rather than selectively accessible. In conclusion, The Privileged Poor should be read by college administrators, faculty members, admissions officers, policymakers, and students interested in educational inequality. It is especially useful for anyone involved in shaping student support, residential life, financial aid, or institutional diversity strategy. The book's main benefit is that it clarifies how disadvantage persists after admission and how elite campuses can unintentionally reward students who already possess social and cultural advantages. Readers gain a sharper understanding of why access programs alone are insufficient and why inclusion requires institutional redesign. What makes the book stand out in its genre is its combination of original sociological observation, clear distinctions between different kinds of low-income students, and concrete attention to everyday campus practices. Rather than treating inequality as an abstract moral problem, Jack shows how it operates through routines, expectations, and invisible norms. The result is a rigorous and highly usable account of why elite colleges fail disadvantaged students and what would need to change for them to do better. If you would like to support Anthony Abraham Jack, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.